Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of The Living Spirit, which shares a look at universal energy, healing, spiritual communication, and ways to awaken to your true human and divine potential. Today I am delighted to welcome Thomas J. Carey, author of The Children of Roswell, who offer insights into 7 decades and a legacy of fear, intimidation, and cover-ups regarding the Roswell crash in 1947 near Roswell, New Mexico, which many believe was the government and media cover-up of the finding of a spacecraft, not of this world. Hello, Thomas, and thank you for joining us on Healing From Within.
Hello, Cheryl. It's very nice to be with you.
And to be with you. Thomas, as listeners of this show have come to expect, my guests and I go within to our inner sense of soul knowingness to search our own experiences and remembrances and to discover the great mysteries of life, energy, science, and spirituality in order to hopefully conclude that life is eternal and there are many ways to know ourselves as spiritual beings having a physical life. And in keeping an open mind and heart, we can be able to see the possibilities for understanding human nature and life beyond this dimension. In today's episode of Healing From Within, we will discuss how the children of Roswell witnesses reveal years of abuse and surveillance by the government. Thomas Carey holds a master's degree in anthropology and is a U.S. Air Force veteran who held top security clearance. He has investigated and written about the Roswell incident for over 2 decades. It is the author's intention to show how one of the most famous UFO incidents impacted the families who were forced to live with the truth while accepting the government's account of the incidents, and then forced to face years of suppression and fear of reprisal from a government sworn to protect them. We will attempt to understand why the government would go to such lengths to keep these families quiet. And by the way, Thomas, I just saw the other day in a tweet that Hillary Clinton has said if she becomes president, she will open up the information that the government has on some of these UFOs, and she's calling it something else.
Well, she's read our book.
Well, she may have read more than the books I've been interviewing people about. She may have read the documents that actually prove.
I don't think she's read the actual documents. I do know that a copy of one of our previous books, Witness to Roswell, was given to Bill Clinton, the person who wrote our foreword to that book. This is like now 2009. His father was Clinton's history professor at Georgetown. So he introduced himself and gave Bill Clinton a copy of one of our prior books. And I don't know that Bill read it, but it sounds to me from the things that Hillary has been saying that she may have read it when she says that one of her statements that she's made quite often now is that she says we may have already been visited. Well, she had to get that from our book.
I have just read exactly that this last week. And I put it on as a tweet so people following me can see that there is so much to be known and so much that's already known. It just has to be, the public has to become aware of it.
The Roswell case, about all the UFO cases that have ever been reported, and there are tens of thousands, the number one case is the Roswell case. Everybody knows that. Everybody admits it. And the Children of Roswell book, it's called The Children of Roswell, A 7-Decade Legacy of Fear, Intimidation, and Cover-Up, is our fourth book about the Roswell incident of 1947. And people are still interested. There's no doubt they are still interested in this case because it's so interesting.
I think, Thomas, they're more interested now than before, because with so many lies and deceptions about so many things, people are checking out things. They don't want to hear from the media. They want to value their own experiences and what they hear from people they love, as we will soon see in what you're going to tell us about some of the people in the stories and how the children heard from their parents and grandparents who actually saw things and wanted to bring it out to the public because they were so sad to see their families have to deal with such repression in a country, a democracy, where we're supposed to be open to the media and to truth and justice and the American way. But Tom, I want to ask you something before we go on. I always ask my guests for a minute to think back to their childhood. And if you think back for a minute, you may see how you came to do the work you do and to be open to sharing this truth with the public.
That is a question I've never thought about, because I was always, I was a very rambunctious child, and I was always interested in sports, and I wanted to be a baseball player, professional baseball player. And if not that, I wanted to be a military pilot. And somewhere along the line, I became interested in anthropology, and that's how the human condition evolved from lower forms of life. And I guess I was always interested in something that was out of the ordinary.
That's what I was thinking. You were curious. And see, if you haven't thought about that in a while, it was already there. Your journey and the work you were going to do.
When I was a teenager, I became interested in UFOs as a teenager because I read about these things in the newspaper, like something seen over the city that our latest fighter jets could not keep up with. And then I was thinking, what could be faster than our fastest fighter jets? And I think, what could that be? And I started thinking about, it sounds to me like they're from somewhere else.
Absolutely. I mean, a good brain will not only make assumptions, but see that the evidence proves that.
And then in 1980, I read a book called The Roswell Incident, and that book just blew me away. It blew me away. I said, oh, my goodness, there are such things, and they're not just little lights in the sky. They're nuts and bolts craft with beings aboard.
Yes, absolutely.
And from that point on, that was the only case I was interested in, Charles. That was 1980. And at some point, I wanted to become involved in the active investigation, first of UFOs, then of the Roswell incident. And that began in the mid-80s. I became a MUFON state section director, and I investigated local UFO cases in and around the Philadelphia area. And after a while, I became sort of bored with it because all of the cases were like, I saw this light in the sky, and it went this way, and it went that way, and I don't know what it was. And I sort of became bored with that because it didn't lead you anywhere.
Right.
So
you're looking for more proof. Yeah. Why have you concentrated on the children involved in the Roswell case?
That is easily answered, Charles, because they're the only ones left alive.
Okay.
Now the actual participants in the case, you have to figure if in 1947 when this happened, if you were 20 years old for like a nice round number. If you were 20 years old, next year you will be 90 if you're still alive, 90 years old. And when I started on this case in 1991 as an active investigator, that's 25 years ago, all of the participants, they were like in their 50s and 60s. They hadn't reached their 70s yet, and now 99% of them are gone. So over the ensuing years, we increasingly found ourselves interviewing children, and now even some of the children are gone, and we're now interviewing grandchildren. So it's sort of like In anthropology, they would call it a longitudinal or longitudinal study of something, from when it starts until it just keeps going over the years. You follow the same thread. That's a longitudinal study. So that's what basically what we've done, and we've learned that some of the families, the ones that were threatened, the ones that knew about the crash, they knew about the wreckage, they knew about especially the little bodies with the big heads.
Mm-hmm.
Those people were targeted for follow-up, for threatening over the years to keep quiet if they want to remain alive.
But you wrote in the book, another reason that you focused on the children, you wrote this, for too many of the children, this has been a lifelong affliction that demands a root cause, a common enemy who has mistreated both women and men. To preserve what? A story about a secret balloon experiment instead of the truth of the UFO? Place yourselves in the shoes of those who actually lived it. Just what types of parents would fill their own sons and daughters, both the physical and emotional anguish that they were experiencing? And I want to say here, the kind of parents that would tell their children are the kind of parents who would want to share the truth. They would
Correct.
Be truthful,
yep.
courageous parents who would value knowledge over denial and truth over deception and wish their children to have these same qualities. So I think that's why the children were able to come forward, and we're going to talk about a few of them, and tell the stories that they learned from their parents. So this has been 70 years of secrecy, and our job remains to break it free, and they feel that way too. So let's go on to tell about the former NFL pro football player. What was his role?
His name was Tom Brookshire. He was a football player for the Philadelphia Eagles, and his... In 1947, he was 16 years old, so he's a child of Roswell at the time of the incident. And his father had a gas station on Main Street in Roswell, and a lot of the people from the base, a lot of the airmen used to, who had automobiles, would fill up their gas tanks at Tom's father's station. And oftentimes, Tom would, when he had spare time, he would pump gas for his father. So I never knew that he was from Roswell until quite late in his life. He died in 2010 of gallbladder cancer very suddenly, very short duration from diagnosis to termination was like 6 months. And so I found out in 2008 that he was from Roswell. And so I called him up, and Tom was a very, you've met people like this. They're gregarious, they're affable, they see humor in everything. And so that was Tom. And he became, after his football career ended with a broken leg with the Eagles, he became the NFL's chief broadcaster with a fellow by the name of Pat Summerall, who played for the New York Giants. The two of them became a broadcasting team, and they were the top team for CBS of the 1970s. So he was quite an accomplished fellow. And so I asked Tom, I said, do you remember the Roswell incident back in 47? He goes, oh, yes, of course, yes. You know, and, a lot of people get sort of leery when I bring that up. No, not Tom. He said, I said, can you tell me anything that you remember about it? And he says, well, yeah, he said, at the time that this happened, it was like an iron curtain had dropped around the airbase just south of town, the Roswell Army Airfield. It's like an iron curtain had dropped around it. Nobody was going in. Nobody was getting out except by air, mm-hmm. And that lasted about a week, and when the curtain was lifted, the people from the base wouldn't talk to the townsfolk anymore. And the townsfolk became very suspicious of what had happened because they all had heard about the UFO crash. And it was never the same again with the town and the base. And the base eventually closed a few years later. But Tom also had another incident with he actually had seen a piece of the wreckage. And it was a strange piece of wreckage that we call memory metal. And there was a lot of it at the crash scene. You could wad it up in your hand, hold it out over a flat surface, let it go, and it would unfurl itself without a crease and just sort of float there in the air and just slowly go down.
It was magical.
It was magical. And Tom had a experience with a welder in town, had a piece of that, and he went over with a group of his friends from Roswell High School, and they said, let us see that piece of metal you got. And so the welder put down his acetylene torch and went over the desk, went in the drawer, and got this piece out. He held it out shoulder height. He held it out straight towards the fellas, and he opened his hand, and out floated this strange piece of metal, just floating there without a crease. You couldn't cut it, scratch it, burn it, do anything to it of a permanent nature. And Tom says, "Gee, I never saw anything like that in my life." So,
you know, Thomas, I think I remember the story that you told of another young girl, Frankie.
Yeah, Frankie Dwyer.
Right, and she also saw a piece of this.
Yes.
When she was waiting at the firehouse. And tell us what happened to her.
Frankie Dwyer Rowe, she's still alive, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
One of the last ones still alive from her generation. She had been at the firehouse waiting for her father, who was a crew chief at the Roswell City Fire Department. She had been in town for a dental appointment and went over to the fire station to wait for her father on the way home for a ride home. So in comes this fellow while she's waiting. He's a highway patrolman on his way home from up north. And he comes into the firehouse and says, "Hey, everybody, look what I got." And he reaches into his hand and he pulls out a piece of this memory metal that I just described for you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Frankie, they all had a crack at handling this thing, and Frankie describes it as, she says, when you wadded it up in your hand, it was like there wasn't any, you couldn't feel anything in your hand, and when you unfurled it, she described it as it would run like water to flatten out. It would just run like they had the consistency of water, but it was, you know, a silvery piece of metal, and she had that going for her, and also her father that night, when he finally came and picked her up and they went home, they said, "Well, Dad, where were you today? Well, you weren't at the fire." "Oh, I was out at a crash site. A flying saucer had crashed." "And, well, what did you see?" "Well, I saw the, you know, the wreckage, but then I saw these strange little bodies lying on the ground. First I thought they were children, but then I noticed their heads were so big they couldn't be children. They were only like 3.5 to 4 feet tall,
mm-hmm.
had a little slit for a mouth, you know, not like a regular mouth, and two little holes in the front of the face for where the nose should be, and two little holes on the side of the head where the ears should be. And they had these strange metallic uniforms that they were wearing. And he described them, and he said, then all of a sudden I saw something moving, and it was one of them was still alive. There was another one just walking around. "Oh, my goodness, well, did you talk to it?" "Well, yes, we did. I talked to it, but we didn't talk to one another like we talk, by moving your mouth and lips and vocal cords and all that. We talked to one another in our heads."
Yeah, mental telepathy.
Yes. And, well, the next thing they wanted to know was, "Well, what did you talk about?" He said, "Well, it was strange. This being sensed that I was concerned about it, and it said to him, don't worry about me. My ship has crashed. It's destroyed. My comrades are dead. I'm stuck here, and there's nothing you can do." So this being was actually more concerned about Dan Dwyer than Dan Dwyer was about it. And just at that point, the military arrived and swore everybody to secrecy.
Let's get back to Frankie for a minute, because a man came to the house. His name was Arthur Philbin.
Yes.
And he threatened her, you know, for fear of losing her life if she talked. And years later, I know you wrote about this, a photocopied page of 17 officers was shown to her, and she circled his picture. She remembered exactly who came and scared her and threatened her. And
the next day after that experience at the firehouse, there's a knock on the door.
Yeah.
And it's Arthur J. Philbin. He's a first lieutenant, big, tall fellow from Brooklyn. He's carrying a baton. What do you call a baton, a stanchion, or something like whatever you call it, those things, a billy club. And they take Frankie's mother into the kitchen and close the door. They take Frankie into the living room. And Arthur Philbin first tries to convince her that she didn't see or hear what she thought she saw and heard from her father. And when she wasn't budging at that, he said, okay, let's put it this way. If you ever talk about this again to anybody, it's a big desert out there. We will take you and the rest of your family, your brothers and sisters and your mother and father out into the desert, and no one will ever see you again. So she's 12 years old at the time, right? She's 12.
Yeah.
How do you tell that to a 12-year-old girl? And so she was haunted for the rest of her life.
I think many of the people, the adults and children who were treated this way, were haunted, and it interrupted the flow of a good life.
The sheriff's family, the sheriff of Chavez,
right. Mm-hmm.
That was another family that was really treated badly, again, threatened with their lives if they talked, and it destroyed the sheriff. It destroyed Sheriff George Wilcox. He never ran for sheriff again. He died young of Alzheimer's, and his wife, Inez, was convinced, because they had roughed him up twice, once at the sheriff's office and once they called him out to the base, they roughed him up again. And Inez believed that they had given him something, whether it was a shot or something, that made an early onset of Alzheimer's. And he was finally put into a mental institution and died there. But she was convinced that the Air Force had done something to him to cause it.
Mm-hmm. And then there was Timothy D. Proctor, who was there with the rancher near the site of the crash. He was only 7 years old, and his life, because of what he experienced, he went from being a bright, happy, outgoing little guy to having a very challenged life as a result of the threats that he had. So perhaps one of the most important questions we can address at this point is, why has the government spent so much time and resources in keeping an event, an earth-shattering event, about wisdom, about the universe and life in many forms? What is the fact that life exists beyond this planet a secret? Why is this a secret? Before you answer that, let me just say, I have on this show over the last 2 years interviewed many people in the UFO research field, sharing their discoveries as you are today. They include Scott and Suzanne Ramsey of the Aztec UFO incidents, and Frank Joseph, Lost Secrets, you may know some of these people, of the Gods, and Robert Salas, author of Unidentified, the UFO Phenomenon, and Nick Redren, Bloodline of the Gods, and others who are sharing their passion to know more about the amazing world of life beyond Earth. So please tell us what you think the objective is for the government and other governments around the world to hide this information.
Well, obviously it wasn't a weather balloon, which is what they said is what their position is today. It's so ridiculous. But why are they still covering up this?
Right.
Well, things have changed since 1947. In 1947, one of the inside officers said it was something that the American people couldn't handle. They felt that they couldn't handle it back then, that our social institutions would collapse, our religions would collapse, our
Let me just interject something here. Right now, if we're watching the presidential race, it's 2016, and we're watching our institutions fall apart. It doesn't have to be because of extraterrestrials. It happens to be because people are insensitive and they're interested in the physical world.
Something is wrong, Cheryl. Something is right is wrong. Wrong is right. Up is down. Down is up. East is west, and west. Everything is backwards. But getting back to your question, why is it still covered up? Because we certainly, obviously, could handle something like that today.
Absolutely, yeah.
With all the knowledge that we have since 1947, in all realms, you know,
yes.
It's certainly something that could be handled. So I believe that the reason it's still covered up, not only Roswell, but UFOs, you call up the Air Force to say, oh, they're not a threat to social and national security, end of conversation. I think it's covered up because it's always been covered up. And if you would all of a sudden, suppose when Obama leaves office, he says, okay, my last parting gift to you will be to open all the UFO files, and you will see that, yes, Roswell did happen. UFOs are real, and they are from the planet Serpo, or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
It would mean that our government was lying to us for the last 70 years. It would be confirmation that our government lies to us. Now, we all know that our government lies to us about this.
Well, I never thought about it as much as I have since I'm
but
watching.
It would be confirmation that they lied to us about a subject that most people have heard about and have wondered about and had differing opinions on. One of them being the extraterrestrial hypothesis. Another one is, you know, like they're time travel or something. But something other than a weather balloon, they've been lying to us for sure for 70 years. So the next question will be, what else are they lying to us about?
Well, the point being, as we watch people ask good questions, and now we're not stopping. We're expecting answers, and this is the way change will come about, and it's time to be
yes.
open and above board and open-minded and open-hearted, and it's happening right now. I want to thank you, Thomas Carey, for your courage and persistence in finding the facts to support the truth that many people have tried to bring to the attention of the public. As all knowledge enhances us, and nothing should be regarded as fearful, for that only encourages more deception and lack of truth. For more information on the people who have shared their experiences in regard to the Roswell incident, go to RoswellInvestigation.com.
www.roswellinvestigator.com. Yes.
Thank you very much. In summarizing today's episode, as we have seen in past shows with researchers of the UFO phenomenon, that some leaders and organizations, out of fear or a misguided need to keep the status quo, have decided what the public and world community have the right to know. Of course, this thinking and secrecy denied the world from assimilating knowledge that can take us beyond the limited illusions of our ego and personality traits to a deeper sense of knowing by the soul and spirit about the eternal nature of life and the possibilities for an expanded vision of creation that might very well include life forms from other planets, galaxies, and universes. Science fiction is really only the search for knowing the truth about all the bits and pieces of what we have been allowed to decipher or that some people have demanded to know. Even with the secrecy of governments worldwide, there are always those who seek and go beyond the normal boundaries to find the truth. Sometimes there is a price to pay, as we have seen in the struggles and hardships faced by those who saw the Roswell crash and the remains and who suffered the consequences of their findings. Sad, I think, to know that what is possibly the most advanced awareness in the world, that of other beings from other worlds, has been hidden, destroyed, and devalued by those in power who deem the ordinary citizen unequipped to handle this knowledge. Thomas and I would hope You always remain true to your own feelings and awareness, not buying into what others or the media or society encourage you to believe. For within each of us, there is the intuition that connects us to each other, energy, and universal source, and the knowledge that we are spiritual beings having a physical life with human and divine potential to evolve and master our circumstances. Be brave and alert to all possibilities. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing From Within, and invite you to visit my website, CherylGlick.com, to listen to and read about authors and practitioners who seek the infinite world of energy, life, health, wisdom, science, spirituality, and imagination in hopes of making our personal and collective consciousness vibrate at a level that allows growth and an improved life condition. Shows may also be heard on webtalkradio.net and dreamvision7radio.com. Thank you.